with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to the Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Get into all things Super Bowl in the middle at the end of the show. From halftime show to commercials to the game itself, we'll talk all things Super Bowl in the second and third segments. Off the top of the show, we'll hit the high school hoops district tournament results from Class A and B. As they got the playoffs started over the weekend. Tell you who won, who plays next, and what's going on for regionals. And then also, of course, 2A and 2A through 4A will start with district tournaments coming up this weekend. It's pretty simple. That's kind of what's on the docket. If you got something else, feel free to chime in. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We'll talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. Going to be outside the listening area. Stay in touch with us a couple of different ways. KADSAM.com. You can live stream that way or download the app. The Paragon Communications app has all things Paragon. Three radio stations, Penny News, Big Elk TV, Paragon TV, all things there inside the Paragon Communications app. And then, of course, we've got the Skinny on Sports podcast that's getting back to normal here pretty quick. I know on Friday I got an update that was that all that madness was 9 hours away from ending. So we might check and see if that finished up, because that was just about to be wrapped up.
I've had
there
some
Friday.
Questions on that.
Yeah, I have too. I've had a whole bunch of them.
Yep.
Where's it at, and where are the new ones?
So now we just didn't stop. It's just
people get a chance to listen to a whole bunch of us right in a row.
Yeah.
Long trip. Take a long trip. Long driving trip.
There you go.
So that's getting rectified there on KADSAM.com. Also, iTunes is where those will be. So if you subscribe to iTunes here at some point in the next few days, your phone will probably just go ding, 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 like you won the lottery or a jackpot in the casino. Good morning, Jared.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm here. That's a fun game.
It was a good game.
I know we'll get to it, but it was a fun game and a fun night. Fun night for everybody.
When you have long-suffering Bengals fans in your family, I'm sure it was a fun night.
I'll tell you what.
33 years worth of futility.
They took it well. Especially my brother-in-law. He took it well. You know, I think they showed they deserve to be there. But anyway, came out on the short end. But it was a fun night. And we'll talk about the game.
High school hoops over the weekend. Let's hit that, just kind of fill everybody in. So that Class A and B district tournaments were played all across the state of Oklahoma, out here in Western Oklahoma. We'll just start with the way I've got these pulled up. Class B, Area 3. On the girls' side, Eric fell to Sentinel on Saturday, 41-26. So Lady Bearcats will be down in the consolation bracket of the regional tournament against Maud. That'll be at 1:30 on Thursday at Verdon. So Eric and Maud at Verdon, 1:30 Thursday. The boys, obviously Sentinel moves on. So Sentinel will play Verdon on the girls in the regional winners bracket game on Thursday at 6:30, also at Verdon. Duke and Maysville, the other two teams in that regional that were winners from the district tournament. So then when you look over at the boys, Area 3, there we are. Sentinel knocked off Eric 49-25. So the Bulldogs, they'll play Maud at 8 o'clock. Eric will play Verdon at 3 o'clock on Thursday afternoon. So elimination games for both Eric teams coming up on Thursday down in Verdon at 1:30 and 3. The girls play Maud. The boys will play Verdon. Class B, Area 1, the Hammond Lady Warriors rolled over Leedy on Saturday night, 80-27. So Hammond is into the regional tournament on the winner's side. They get Corn Bible Academy at Hammond, 6:30 Thursday night. So Hammond, Corn Bible on the winner's side. Leedy drops down into the consolation bracket. They'll play at Hammond at 1:30 on Thursday against Indiahoma. So that'll be an elimination game for the Lady Bison on Thursday, 1:30 at Hammond against Indiahoma. Boys, let's see. Leedy got the better of Hammond. That was a pretty good game. 53-45. So the Bison knock off Hammond, leading into the regional winners bracket side. They'll play at Hammond against Indiahoma at 8 o'clock on Thursday. The Warriors drop down for Corn Bible at 3 o'clock on Thursday in the consolation bracket there in that regional tournament. Both Leedy and Hammond will be at Hammond all the way through the regional tournament Thursday, Friday, Saturday, as that's the main site for that regional. So they flipped it. Hammond girls beat Leedy. Leedy boys beat Hammond. And so they'll move on into the regional tournament. You were over at Burns Flat Deal City on Saturday night for district finals. Tell us what happened.
I'll tell you what, when you're talking about playing the best basketball at the right time, I think that's what's happening with the Trojanettes and the Trojans. Canute beating the Canute girls beat Snyder pretty handily. It was 53-30 final outside of one player for Snyder. Everyone else was struggling against Canute. Just the lockdown defense that Canute's been playing lately, forcing teams to shoot over him over a zone defense, it's been really the key for me anyways, because you're going to expect, you know, Kylie Smith to get 13. Abby Janning was my player of the game. She had 14 points. You know, the offense has been more in sync as of late. That's their seventh win in a row. They're a dangerous team. I think you said that. They're a dangerous team that, you know, a lot of people probably, although they aren't ranked, they probably would love to avoid. It sets up a really fun game, I think, on Thursday night against Navajo. Coach Ellison has that team rolling, I think, and it's back at Burns Flat. I think that is going to be a fantastic matchup. I mean, there's really not much to say about that one other than, I mean, Canute just played better. Everybody played. I mean, everybody scored. All the starters score. I mean, that's what I like to see, and I'll get to that point coming up, but I like to see the distribution of the basketball and everybody taking the shots, not scared to take shots, getting involved. And by the end of the first quarter, everybody had scored. So the ball movement was fantastic offensively. And then I mentioned the defense. The boys, I thought that might be the game of the night. Canute taking on Burns Flat. You know, we've been touting up Burns Flat that once they've got their basketball legs underneath them, they were pretty much, you know, turned into a really good team. But Canute, I mean, after the first quarter, it was 11-11. Then Canute turned it on in the second quarter, outscored them 15-2, and just pulled away big time in the fourth quarter thanks to Jackson Beck's 4 3-pointers in the fourth quarter alone. It took a little bit for him to get going. Up to then, he only had two buckets. He had 4 points going into the fourth quarter. And once he found his rhythm, it was good night, sweetheart. He was on fire, finished with 18 points, game high. My player of the game was Jackson Beck. And when he can get going, it's a hard team to beat. And also, I'd like to point out, when Kyron Winery doesn't foul, because, you know, he's a load. I mean, he's always going 110 miles per hour, and I love that about him. But sometimes he can overdo it. All of a sudden, he's in foul trouble. He has to sit on the bench longer than what he wants. It takes the team out of rhythm. When he is in control, he's a good player, and that is something I've noticed from him lately. He only committed 2 fouls. He finished with 7 points. And again, I mentioned ball distribution and everybody scoring. Let's see here. At half, we had 3, 6, 7 players who've scored. It wasn't just one guy. You know, no one scored at double digits after the second quarter. So it was well team played basketball by Canute. They get Carnegie on Thursday night back at Burns Flat. Canute has, I mean, you know, that's how it works in these playoffs. You win, your path gets a little easier, shorter. I mean, it sets up nicely for them. I mean, Carnegie, you know, each game's going to be tougher than the last. You know, and you're looking ahead, a little more likely Hydro boys, if they were able to take care of Carnegie. And, I mean, then who knows? But they're playing really good. Both teams are playing really good basketball at the right time of the year. I was impressed with how they came out Saturday night.
Yeah, Thursday night's games are huge from a path standpoint,
yeah.
Because a loss, you're 5 games away.
Right.
A win, and you could be 2.
Exactly.
You know, that's just it's a huge game on Thursday. It's really hard to lose Thursday and go all and the way back yeah. through and make
it
to the state tournament.
But it's sure hard. It's hard.
But it's really super yeah. hard to do. And so, you know, it's one thing to win Thursday, then lose if you were in the regional final. Then you got three games. But, man, losing on Thursday, two more just to get to the area tournament and then having all three of those coming up that following week. So, it's big games on Thursday for sure. Canute, they're sneaky. That girls' game is going to be a good one. Navajo almost put up a hundo on Hollis.
Saw that, yeah.
I was going to text Tim and say, hey, be nice. Be nice to people.
I'm not going to text him this week. I'll say hi to him on Thursday and ask him, hey, did you maybe score too many points? Or did you score all your points in that game? That, yeah. They're a good team. They were kind of one of those teams where, I mean, they're one of my state tournament teams, and now we'll see them. So we'll see how it works out. It's going to be a fun game on Thursday. I think two good coaches with two good teams. It's going to be fun.
I think the game of the night, at least for the Paragon schools on Saturday, was definitely over in Arapahoe-Butler.
Yeah, what happened there?
Arapahoe and Thomas on the girls' side. It was a close game throughout. Thomas had a couple of chances to tie it down at the end at 34-31. Arapahoe got a block on a three-pointer at one point, then got the rebound and poured in two free throws, and that was it. But the Lady Indians win 36-31. So they advance to the regional winners bracket Thursday night at Arapahoe-Butler, and they will play Drummond. You've seen Drummond.
I have seen Drummond.
At their ceiling. I watched that game. I watched a ton of that game against Canute. That's a game that I think Arapahoe-Butler should win from what I saw.
Yeah, Canute took care of them. There's a recipe there to beat them. Yeah, Arapahoe should be okay.
And then on the boys' side, the Indians knocked off the Cheyenne Raiden Bears 60-31. So they'll also get Drummond in the winner's bracket. Cheyenne Raiden will go down into the consolation bracket. They will play over to Arapahoe 3 o'clock on Thursday against Waucomas. So Cheyenne Raiden and Waucomas on the boys' side, that's an elimination game for the boys. Cheyenne Raiden girls are out. They were knocked off by Thomas on Friday night. In the winner go home game, and so the Lady Bears are out. The Bears are in there in the consolation bracket over at Arapahoe Butler 3 o'clock.
Not often
on Thursday.
Do we say Cheyenne is out after the first weekend. Girls, that is.
No. Yeah. No, that's one of those things that almost doesn't compute in your mind.
Not really. Used to seeing them late
success.
February. Yeah.
Success that they've had for sure. So that's where the Class A and B tournaments are. We're efforting. We're going to effort some coaches, get their thoughts on the district, what's coming up in the regional as we move along throughout the week. And then, of course, on Friday, 2A through 4A will get going. Merritt will host Fairview, and then Elk City in the 4A district tournament will play Woodward here in the Pioneer Center. And then, of course, Elk City tonight down at Elgin. No JV games. It's just varsity girls, varsity boys, and
this is a makeup, right?
Yes,
right.
One of the COVID games,
right?
And oh, by the way, side note, alert! Game times have been moved up 30 minutes. It's 6 o'clock tip for the girls, varsity game. So 6 o'clock for Elk City tonight against Elgin. Seems like maybe Merritt has one more, or are they done?
They may be done.
Yeah, they may be done.
Look at that schedule. Earlier this weekend. I think they are done.
I can't remember. Maybe I'm just thinking about hearing other teams where I've been and that they have more. That's probably what it was. Newcastle has to play tomorrow. Just hearing that over the PA on Friday. Friday night, the Elkettes started pretty slow. It wasn't a very good first half. They picked it up nicely. Ended up winning 50-24 over Newcastle, even in the record at 11-11. So tonight's game could give the Elkettes a winning record in the regular season at 12-11. I think that'd be a really nice segue into a playoff run. The Elks fought hard for a while. Newcastle just had too much, and they knocked off Elk City. And so the Elks fall to, 9-12 is their – or something like that. Yeah, they played one less game because of that out this tournament. Elks, the girls had to play an extra game. So 9-12 for the Elks. With a game that's probably winnable against Elgin tonight. The Elkettes should win. They'll go play. Elgin's a team that has struggled mightily throughout the year. Big Elks and the Owls, that could be a pretty good one tonight for the final regular season game for the Brown and White before the district's tournament starts on Friday. We'd like to hear what you saw. 225-9698. I know a bunch of you guys were out watching different basketball throughout the weekend. What did you saw? What impressed you? What are you looking forward to coming up in the regional tournament this week for A and B, and of course the district tournaments for 2A and 4A? Shoot us a text, 225-9698. Tell us what you saw.
And yes,
brag on your kids, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, we love that. And we saw the brawl, okay? We don't need to talk about that thing happening over in eastern Oklahoma.
Oh.
We don't need to talk about that, do we?
No.
No.
Whoa.
No.
Who was that?
I don't know.
It was Calvin.
Calvin
and LaFleur.
LaFleur. Was that who it was?
Calvin and LaFleur, maybe.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, look it up, but we're not going to rehash it. That was ridiculous stuff. I'm glad it doesn't get like that out here. You ever see anything like that in person?
No.
No.
Trying to think.
Insane. I haven't seen anything come from that as far as charges, but man, seen some stuff. Where
I mean, there's parents out in the middle of the floor.
Parents on the floor. We had haymakers being thrown, connected.
That
was scary.
The one underneath the bucket.
Yes, that was scary. I'm thinking, okay, you just don't get a free pass because you got a jersey on, man.
The one underneath the bucket, because everything, like, I saw two different, I didn't see the floor angle until later. I saw kind of the higher up angle.
Right.
And you see, like, it starts, and then everything kind of spills toward the stands, and you kind of miss what happens underneath the basket.
Oh, there's too much going on.
Yeah, but then from that floor angle, that's what it was focused on.
Good.
And that was an absolute just...
It was disgraceful.
Yeah.
I mean, kids shouldn't play rest this year.
Dude just
or ever.
Him.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is a whole another discussion. I've had a couple people came up to me on Saturday. Did you see that? What's your opinion? Da, da, da. Like, man, the OSSA needs to get a hold of that. Or get in front of this stuff.
Well, you'd think
and,
that.
I mean, is there a policy? I don't know. Is there a policy? There needs to be something. If you step foot on a court as a fan, you're out. You're done and probably done for a long time ever attending an OSSA event, which is incredibly hard to police, I know.
Yeah, I mean.
But that is just what I don't get it.
If you had that in place, it probably works. But my thought is, you know, there's different situations. So if the rule is if you step on the floor, you're out forever. Well, there's other circumstances where people would come. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
And so that's. I think you'd have to at least have a little bit of gray area for interpretation of what they were doing out there. Now, in a situation like the other night, that's I know the first impulse is to protect your kid, but that's not out there.
What the parents are doing there is escalating the situation.
100%.
You know that. Let
listen. We saw it. We saw it down in Blair. Same thing.
Right.
The kids themselves were actually. Handling it pretty well, and then all of a sudden you got a couple of parents out there that start grabbing and clawing
kids,
and people
and
all that.
Yeah.
And that's where that's when the situation got escalated. The dude in the yellow hat. Come on, bro, stay on the side and nothing ever really happens.
Yeah.
Now the other night that was already going. And it's not like they lit the fuse, because the fuse was already lit on the floor with the players when parents started coming out. But I mean you can just see before it happens, parents yelling down at kids or over across at the other. You can see that building it, you know, before the first stuff happens over there on that left wing.
I mean,
things got completely out of hand.
This has been escalating, right? We're seeing more and more of this. We saw it at that Hammond game. Was that last year? Where a mom just came out of the stands, just came. Not
was
a Hammond mom. It was over in.
It was in Navajo, wasn't it? Oh, no, you're talking about New Lima.
Yes.
In the playoffs.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes. I mean, it's getting out of hand.
Well, in situations like that, when that's the reason that a – I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, if somebody's like a nurse or an EMT and sees a
totally.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, okay, they can't get kicked out forever because they're trying to help.
Right.
That's where you got to – some interpretation has
what?
To happen.
We have in every game now. Every game, there is video. There is.
100%.
Everybody has a huddle. Everybody has a Paragon-type stream.
Yep.
Everybody. So.
Or somebody's mom is filming it.
Right. So the OSSA administration, whoever, can go back to the film and investigate it. Why were you on the court? Were you helping or were you instigating? Looks like Joe Smith there was instigating that, making that a problem. He's done.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small town. Everybody knows who you are.
Oh, that's for sure.
And you're not going to get away with it. You're not going to sneak back in with a fake mustache. That's it. I mean, we have the evidence, and there's clear evidence here. You'd have to watch this particular video about 24 times to pinpoint what's going on. It's getting out of hand, and no wonder we have a shortage of refs. Who'd want to be involved in that?
Oh, yeah, no, and, you know, some people that watched it were like, huh, did you see the refs? They just moved out of the way. I'm like, of course they did.
Of course they did.
They don't need to. They're the smartest ones in the gym.
Yeah.
Just whatever. You guys do whatever you want. We're going to sit over here by the scorer's table and just mock you because of the ridiculous way that, I mean, it's, listen, I'm not excusing the kids because that's inexcusable what happened. But it's way more damning to me the way parents are acting.
Yes. Yes.
Way more damning because, you know, it's a 15 to 18 year old kids in the heat of the moment. Who hasn't made a bad choice?
Right.
Maybe not to that extent on the floor, but whatever. We've all made bad choices.
We've all yelled things.
That's right.
You know, and I'm guilty of it. Thank God for my wife for giving me an elbow in the gut a couple times. You know, and thank goodness most times I have a headset on and I kind of watch what I say. Have to. But you got to have some control as a parent. You have to.
Well, and the stiffer the penalties that will be handed down from the OSSAA, you'd like to think might would help curtailing some of these situations. You know, in a snap judgment, I don't know that it goes through your mind, hey, I may never get to go watch a high school basketball game again if I run on the floor.
Right.
But at least that's the possibility if that's what happens to the people that are out there in the middle of the floor acting a fool.
I found an article on this, and I'm going to read a quote from the Calvin superintendent. Let me make sure this who it's between the two teams. It was between host Calvin and LaFleur.
No.
They actually had to move the district championship game to Wilburton High School because of this. Calvin superintendent, he's told the Ada newspaper, with approximately 5:15 left in the fourth quarter, Calvin was leading 66-36. This game was out of hand already. LaFleur fans began accessing the court in response to an on-court incident. At that time, Calvin administrators and coaches attempted to get the fans back in the bleachers while also trying to get the athletes away from the opposing team and fans. Once opposing fans accessed the court, the main priority was making sure student-athletes were safe and removed from the court. End quote.
Yeah, and that's what you try to do, you know, and that's one side. I'm sure if we heard from the LaFleur superintendent, either he'll be totally embarrassed or we'll have a similar thought, except for the other way. He just switched the names, you know what I'm saying? But it's just sad.
It is sad.
It's just sad that that's what it comes to.
When, and we'll end on this, when we were sent the video, sent to us at the same time, I don't know if you've seen it at the same time I did, my first thought was, oh, no, what did a commentator say now?
Hope you filed that bias report.
Turns out that they didn't have a commentator.
No, I kept on cranking up the sound so I could see if I could hear anything, and couldn't.
It's a bunch of screaming, that's it.
Yeah,
oh,
ugly scene.
Boy.
Didn't happen out here, though.
Glad we have cooler heads out here.
So far, anyway. Jim's still out in Las Vegas, so he's not going to be with us today. Let's hit the Super Bowl. It was a close game throughout. I think there was a little bit of blowout potential early in the second quarter. For me, the Rams looked like they had figured things out offensively. And then once Odell Beckham got hurt, it was a different Rams offense. They could never establish the run. I thought Cincinnati's defensive line, linebackers, that 55, that Wilson, he was all over the place. Felt like he was making every tackle there for a while. And so they did a great job of shutting down the run. They took Cooper Kupp away for a lot of that game in between the time that Beckham got hurt in that last drive. But for me, Cincinnati's going to be kicking themselves for a couple of different things, and one of those was settling for a field goal after Stafford got picked in the third quarter. They throw the pass down the field, Higgins face masks the defensive back and scored a touchdown. And then the very next drive, they intercept it and they're inside the 30 right there. You know what I mean? That was a chance for me where Cincinnati could have really created some space between themselves and the Rams. When they didn't do that, then it kind of kept L.A. in it. And it didn't make L.A. panic because they were just down a score. And so that kind of, to me, was one of the key moments in that game. The pick, it looked like Cincinnati had everything rolling downhill. The Rams' defense goes out, keeps them out of the end zone, forces the field goal. And then from there, it was just a back-and-forth game, which, finally one offense was able to put together a drive and score a touchdown to win the game.
Yeah, the key was OBJ going down. I mean, one of the keys, you mentioned Kupp, I think, because that was kind of the question floating around. Man, they can't get the Kupp. I was like, man, I think their safeties are really staying on top of him, you know, doubling down on him. But once they figured that out at the end, that drive at the end there. Did you have a problem with all the flags at the end? Like all of a sudden it was a fairly clean game. You didn't see a lot of yellow flags until the very end. Was that a thing to you or it just, it is what it is?
There's always a conspiracy theory. It's in LA and it's, in favor of the Rams. Having said that, the worst call all night was on that T. Higgins touchdown, or the worst non-call. I mean, that was ridiculous. He grabbed me by the face mask and threw him down. Yes. And then caught it and ran in. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, it's hard for me to go, oh, my gosh, the refs really put it to Cincinnati. Now, the one thing about the way that all transpired, you know, that it's what, third down when Wilson tips the pass away and then they call holding down about the five-yard line or so. I think it was about to be fourth down. And, oh, by the way, if you watch that play from the start, the Rams clearly – false started both tackles.
Oh no, I didn't see that.
Oh my gosh, go back and watch that play where they call the hole where Wilson, the linebacker, looked like he made a great play to knock it away. Both tackles clearly were false starts.
Wow,
I mean it wasn't even close.
Never saw that.
And then they call the hold, which what I mean he that one was the one where it's like, oh come on, what a great play. Plus you just missed to start that play never should have happened. But you know it's. It's one of those things when you're down there, and we see this in the regular season and playoffs all the time in football. When it's close like that, guys are going to try to get away with holding.
Sure.
And sometimes the refs keep the flag in their pocket. Sometimes they feel like it's egregious enough to throw the flag. I thought the one before, when they called a pass interference in the end zone, the official nearest the pylon, immediately he was – making the holding sign, which doesn't let the Rams have it at the one, right? I mean, they're half the distance to the goal. They're still out a little ways. And then they discussed it, and they went ahead and called the pass interference. When you saw the contact with the ball still, I think they made the right call. It's just that the official was so adamant with the holding to start with before they got together and talked about it.
Yeah.
I don't have it. I mean, I thought, honestly, I hate that it went that way at the end because – I was thinking to myself, this is the way officials should do this.
Right.
Stay out of the way.
Right.
And let these teams play. You know, if it just it all happened so bunched up so closely at the end that it kind of left a little bit of a sour taste in your mouth. But at the end of the day, I don't think it really and truly had an impact on the final score because Stafford and Kupp were just going to make plays to beat the Bengals at that point.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking at the final drive for Cincinnati, I was like, man, is this going to set up to for at least like a field goal, you know what I mean? And I thought, is a kicker really going to win the MVP? You know, because I thought they don't need much to get him into range, right?
Yeah,
we talked about that
it.
Last week just to tie it. And I thought, man, what if he ties it, then they go into overtime, and what if he kicks to win it? We were halfway joking about him being possible MVP candidate, but it could have happened. But in that last play on fourth down, I know that brought up on our text line, you know, why wasn't Mixon on the field? Was it just to throw him a curveball?
I think that, you know, that when you watch the way the Bengals played all year long, you know, P. Ryan was the third down back, right?
He was.
And so in those situations, in the two-minute drill, it's kind of like it's not third down, but, you know, it's that way, and you need – you know, the guy, P. Ryan, did a great job on the play where Burrow rolled out and hit a throw down the field blocking. You know, they showed Mixon the one time. He actually, even though his guy sacked Burrow, he stepped up. He knocked him off his feet, but the coverage down the field was such that
right.
Then the guy got back up and ended up sacking Burrow there, the linebacker number 50, Jones. So maybe it was that. Maybe it was just that Samaje was more – kind of comfortable in that situation. I'll be honest with you, I didn't watch the Bengals game in, game out. Maybe that's their philosophy throughout the year. But I know this, as watching Joe Mixon in college the way that we all did, if you wanted to have a guy out there at the running back spot that is dangerous catching the football, it's definitely him.
Right.
That dude is like a wide receiver with his hands. P. Ryan can catch it too, and he's more of a load and harder to get through, I guess, maybe picking up the blitzes and stuff like that. But I do think, I do think that they, you know, that's just kind of their MO as much as anything else.
I think
I'd rather have Mixon out there.
Totally. But I think that play that happened on fourth down, because if you saw where P. Ryan was, I think it was the same play that he scored on versus Kansas City. I think that was the play design. Wasn't that more or less a screen?
Well, I don't think it was supposed to be. But
just
when
he
got
was
pressure,
at, I
yeah,
thought, man,
I think it's just an outlet.
Kind of slipping out of yeah. the backfield.
I think it's just
I
an
think
outlet.
That was the play. Was
because here's the deal. The offensive linemen weren't down the field.
Right.
So, you know, to me, that takes screen out because they want to get those guys out in front of everything.
Yeah, you need the protection.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's the story of the game. And it was the story going into the game was, can Cincinnati block the Rams? They did a fantastic job for the first half. But in that second half, the Rams D-line absolutely controlled that ball game.
Right.
And, you know, it gave – Kupp and Stafford, that was cool at the end. It was a great drive. Kupp had two touchdowns. There can't be very many receivers in the history of the Super Bowl to have two touchdowns. He shouldn't have been the MVP. The MVP of that game was Aaron Donald.
Absolutely.
That defense is what won them the game. It kept them in it for so long when the Rams offense couldn't do anything. It's like they were searching so much after OBJ got hurt. They didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, McVay, it was like he was back in – the Super Bowl against the Patriots, and they couldn't get a first down. Kept on running. I mean, my goodness gracious, dude.
Yeah.
It's like he finally just – they got to the point where they had no other choice but to let Stafford and Kupp go win the game, and he got out of the way and did it. But, I mean, like, what are you doing? They kept on Cam Akers, 8 carries for 7 yards. Oh, now he's got 10 carries for 12 yards. And just kept on beating his head against the wall with the thing. And it almost cost him the game. If, you know, I just think Cincinnati, man, if they could have just any iota of protection in the second half for Burrow, they may even run away and hide with that thing after the long touchdown, then the interception.
Yeah.
And even then, they still had multiple chances to extend that lead out to 2 possessions. How long was it? 20-16.
Forever.
It was forever 20-16. Well, until the last drive.
Right.
You know, and so I think when you look back at the game, if you're a Bengals fan, you're not – I mean, you're obviously disappointed because you got to the Super Bowl and had a chance to win it. And we're absolutely right there. But your deficiency was so great that you couldn't overcome it. Like, it felt like of the groups, you know, the receivers, especially after Beckham got hurt, Cincinnati's receivers were better. The running back position was better. Quarterback was fairly even. Then on the defensive lines, I mean, Cincinnati's defensive line was fantastic too. They just weren't going against their own O-line. So you didn't notice as much with the pressure on the quarterback, but they still got there. You know, with Stafford and the rest of it, you know, their secondary definitely left something to be desired. But it's also you're trying to cover Cooper Kupp. You know, right. Jalen Ramsey couldn't cover anybody either, and he's supposed to be the best one out there.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So it's a hard spot there, but if you're Cincy, you're thinking, obviously we're in great shape if we can figure out the O-line, but at the same time, it's so hard to get back into that game, and not only back into that game and have that chance that they had throughout the middle of the third quarter until there was just a few minutes left to widen that gap to where the Rams weren't going to score more than once. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It felt like if Cincinnati could have just got to 27, then it was over.
It was over.
The Rams weren't going to score twice.
Right.
But they never could. They couldn't even get down there into field goal range to be able to let McPherson make it a touchdown game either. You know, they just couldn't hold up on the offensive line. And, you know, Burrow did whatever he could possibly do. Cincinnati didn't turn it over, did they? Don't think so.
No, they never did.
So they get beat. They get beat 23-20, minus two or plus two in the turnover margin. That just tells you how dominant that D-line was for the Rams to me, because all those things go in Cincinnati's favor with the turnovers and this and that. But when you look up, they just couldn't. They couldn't sustain enough drives to get far enough ahead where the Rams couldn't catch them.
Yeah, you know, it's right there for Cincinnati. You know, the offseason, you know, they're going to address the needs you speak of, and I think it starts on offensive line, right? You think
yes.
I mean, obviously draft. Do you think they try to get anybody in free agency? Probably. I'm not sure. I don't know anything what they're
– Oh, they have, like, the fourth most cap space in the league.
There you go. So I don't think they're going anywhere is what I'm saying.
No, I don't think so either. They're going to be in the conversation – for the next few years, for sure.
Yeah.
But the thing that kind of stinks for them is not only were they in the conversation this year, they were at the top of the heap. Because I leave that game thinking they should have won.
I know.
They couldn't block the D-line. You know what I
mean?
And a lot of times in these games, you think you have it figured out, right? This one we did. Because that was the whole conversation throughout the 2 weeks was, if Cincy can block them, they'll have a great chance to win. And when they did, they were ahead. And then all of a sudden they couldn't, and there was just nothing that Joe Burrow could do. They just couldn't do anything. And the problem for Cincinnati was, a lot of times they were getting there with four. So it wasn't like they were having to send blitzes to get to Burrow. They were just saying, Donald, Miller, you boys, just go get him. And,
yeah.
And they did. And then their back end was still sound and solid because they weren't having to support with extra resources to try to either stop the run or get pressure on Burrow. And it was just a masterpiece in the second half. Outside of the one play, Cincinnati did nothing offensively. And, you know, it could be argued the one play should have never been allowed to happen.
Well, the Jamar Chase catch, the fantastic one. I forget what quarter it was. It was on the far side.
Yeah, it's first half.
First half.
Yeah, I'm talking about after halftime.
Oh, after halftime.
They hit
one
play.
I didn't hear that part. Okay.
You know,
the one.
The Higgins touchdown.
The first play of the second half, yeah.
Outside of that, they really did nothing. And that just allowed the Rams to plug away at it, overcome even Stafford's mistake because their defense held them out. Stafford, he was really good most of the night. I mean, I don't even blame him for the pick in the third quarter. I think the receiver stopped running. He threw it where he thought he was going to be, and then he reached out one hand, tipped it up, and they got it. The other one, he didn't throw it far enough there at the end of the first half. He was good. I think a lot of people are happy for him. You know, Dakota just sent us that text. Detroit finally won a Super Bowl, as they're claiming Stafford. You know, he's a guy that got lost for a lot of his career because of where he was playing and the lack of success that the Detroit Lions had. But he's also a guy that I think is finally going to be properly rated, because I think he's been an underrated guy because you could just point at the lack of success in the postseason. Now he gets on a team with the Rams that was literally needing him.
Right.
And he performed. You know, all those snarky comments about playoffs are done.
Oh yeah, you can put those to bed
for Matthew Stafford.
Right. No, I've already had people ask me, is he Hall of Fame worthy now? Now he has a Super Bowl ring to back up the stats. we'll see. I mean, let's see how the rest of his career goes. I don't think winning one Super Bowl automatically gets you in the Hall, but he does have the stats to back it up. But we'll see how it continues. My big question is his future in LA, and you know, LA's got a lot of questions to answer now that they went all in on this to get this Super Bowl. They don't have any draft capital, it feels like, and you know, they're going to have to answer a lot of free agency questions. So it's going to be almost a completely different looking team, I think, next year. Let's see how Stafford works with what he has next year too and moving forward. You know, do they keep the success going? Can they? I don't know.
Yeah, they traded draft capital for a Super Bowl title.
Pretty much.
Is what they did. With the trade for him. Giving up the next two, they don't have a first rounder for like 2024. So they're two straight drafts without one of those. I think it's interesting because for the first time in maybe ever in the NFL, we've seen something happen back to back years. And will this become a trend? And that is teams building without a quarterback and then going and getting one and winning. You know, because I think the conventional wisdom is for all these teams at the top of the draft, well, we got to find the franchise quarterback and then we'll go from there. Well, the last 2 years, it's been totally different. Everything else was in place and they went and got a quarterback to be the cherry on top with Brady at Tampa and now Stafford here with the Rams. And that bucks conventional wisdom. And here's the thing about that league. If we know anything about the NFL, it's this. It is a copycat league.
Yep.
So quarterback movement hasn't necessarily been a thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Quarterback movement hasn't been.
No, it's always been.
The quarterback's there, and now let's fill out around him.
Right. Now is it.
How much does this
going to change?
Things?
I don't know. And then, you know, this is a topic we'll talk about all offseason is where does he go? What quarterback does this team try to get? You know, the first guy that comes to mind, and it's right there on the text line, Kyler Murray. I guess that is a thing.
Yeah, it didn't have anything to do with any kind of marketing ploy.
No, I thought that's where I was going. I kept waiting for that commercial, you know.
And even when you saw like
– I thought the QR code thing. I thought, that has to be it. I was like, somebody get a picture. That's going to be Kyler Murray, and he's going to – no, it was something else. So it's a thing. It's a real thing.
The Cardinals kind of wiped their social media, but it left only pictures of Kyler. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah.
Is that a way of saying
Instagram?
They're sorry? Or?
I don't know.
Please don't be mad at us.
When I saw that happen, I thought, okay, this is definitely a ploy. This is some kind of marketing scheme.
Yeah.
And then it never came.
Hey, listen, if I'm Kyler, I want to be in Arizona. You know why?
The Super Bowl's there next year.
The Super Bowl's in Phoenix. You want – that's the trend now. Home team gets to be in the Super Bowl. Does a team take the L.A. model and then they trade for Kyler?
Who is that team?
That's a great question. I don't know.
I think a team a lot of people have thought for the last 2 years have been Super Bowl ready outside of quarterback, and it hasn't worked with either acquisition they've made, has been the Indianapolis Colts.
Hell yeah.
The great O-line, the running game now, obviously, with Jonathan Taylor. You know, defensively, they've been very good too. So that, you know, and right there in that same division, is it the Titans? What was everybody saying after they lost to the Bengals? Yeah. If they just had a quarterback.
They had a quarterback. Not a wide receiver playing quarterback.
So, you know, and is it Rodgers? Is it Wilson? Is it Jimmy G? You wouldn't think so. I think Jimmy G's kind of the problem more than the solution at San Francisco.
Yes.
Even though he's probably better than people give him credit for, he's still maybe not the guy that you want to hitch your wagon to in this situation if you're one of these other teams. Or could it be Kyler? How crazy would that be? After everything they've done to fill the roster out and build the organization around him from the hiring of the coach.
Right.
3 years ago.
And that's another question. Would the coach marriage work? You knew Cliff Kingsbury.
Right.
With his offense, it would work with Kyler, and it has for the most part. know, could he be inserted in a different organization with a coach like, God, I don't know how to call a play for this guy. I need an offensive coordinator that does. I mean, I'm not a run and gun going crazy kind of guy. So I don't know. Or does Kyler just go play baseball? Who knows?
Yeah. Or could he operate a normal, just a pro style offense? He's never done it, but that doesn't mean he can't.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be the offseason is going to be interesting. There's a lot of questions for
a lot of questions at quarterback.
A lot of questions at
the last 2 years almost make those questions more important because you can see guys leaving now.
Yeah.
Wrapping up the Super Bowl, Baker. Now, I don't think Baker's a free agent. I think they picked up his fifth-year option. So he's under contract. But they haven't done the extension beyond that. Dakota's asking on the talking about it on the text line. Baker for Kyler swap. Boy, that'd be funny. But Baker's under contract with the Browns this year. But nothing beyond that. Because they picked up his fifth-year option last summer or the summer before that. Okay. Listen. Unpopular opinion alert coming, and that's okay. I can handle any of the backlash. Last night's halftime show was maybe my favorite because they hit the sweet spot of music for me from that late junior high through college time. They hit it dead on the head, and that hasn't happened very often for our generation in the halftime show. It's either somebody you don't know because they're too young, or it's somebody you don't know because they're too old. This one was right in there perfect. But it wasn't the best halftime show of all time. No offense to any of those folks up there. It just wasn't. It was cool, and it was fun, and it was, like I said, probably my favorite. Because I love that music from back then.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the best. If you think it's even close to the best, do yourself a favor and get on YouTube and go back to 2007 Super Bowl down in Miami between the Colts and the Bears and watch Prince whip out a halftime show.
Yeah.
That one was incredible. I personally love U2 in 2002, the first Brady Super Bowl. I loved that one down in New Orleans. Michael Jackson back in the Cowboys' first Super Bowl of the 90s.
That's where I was going to go.
Awesome.
That's where I was going to go.
And
Michael Jackson one.
Be honest with you, a little bit of Bruno Mars has been pretty good at
that
times.
That wasn't bad. I enjoyed it.
I loved it. I loved it last night. But
last
let's not
night was good.
Let's
but
not call it the
yeah,
greatest.
Yeah, that's the first initial reaction. And isn't that the first thing everybody does? They jump on their socials and either declare
it's either
the
best,
best
or the worst.
Or the worst.
That's right. Every time.
Look, why can't we just enjoy it? You know, I enjoyed it. It did take me back to the, for me, my late high school, early college days. You know, and. I thought it was well done. It was all the favorites. It wasn't some off songs, you know. I'm not a fan of Kendrick Lamar. Maybe I just haven't given him a chance. But I didn't know his song.
Yeah.
I didn't know it, but I knew everybody else's, even Mary J. Blige. So, but
yeah. The youngsters I was watching with were like, "Who are these people?"
You know who I thought was going to bring the house.
Mary J. Blige, anyway.
You know who I thought was going to bring down the house? 50 Cent. Like, quite literally, when he was hanging upside down and how big he got, I thought he was going to bring down that house, man.
Oh, the jokes were flying about poor 50.
He got a little...
I mean, here's the problem for him. You can't stay that Adonis-like your whole life.
No.
When you think back at the first time we saw him.
Yeah.
Yeah, a guy's going to put on a couple LBs. I mean, it wasn't like he was gigantic or nothing. To me, he just wasn't quite as...
That's just life. It happens.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I thought the commercial. I don't remember a commercial. I can't think of a time that they were worse. Larry David. I saw his head, his face. I didn't pay attention to what he was hawking.
Here's the deal. I was at this football watch party, and when the commercials came on, everybody started talking. You know, and it was bathroom time or food time or drink time, and I wasn't really focused in on the commercials, and mainly because the last few years they haven't been good.
No,
and I was like, you know what? And you know what? If they're good, I'll just find it on YouTube tomorrow.
That's the problem. The commercial thing has kind of jumped the shark.
Well, they're
because
to
they're all out
them before
that's
the
right.
Super Bowl.
That's right. It's not
right.
You don't go to work the next day going hump day, you know, or
right.
whatever. You know,
Budweiser,
or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you've never seen it. You've seen all of them.
The best two was that Q code floating around, a QR code, whatever. Because I was like, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, can someone get their phone out? And it was long, too. It gave you time to, that got everybody's attention. And for me personally, I thought this is brilliant marketing. They just flash up Marvel. They flash up the new Doctor Strange movie, but they don't show the entire trailer. Mm-hmm. They said, hey, go online if you want to watch it. I thought, hey, that's brilliant, because mm-hmm. I hadn't seen it before then. I was like, oh, there's a new trailer out. So after the game, I was able to pull it up and watch it. But others just like, ah.
Online, the Sopranos one was getting a lot of traction.
Right.
That was pretty cool.
That's cool.
I enjoyed the Austin Powers one.
Except there was no Austin Powers. It was just Dr. Evil.
Well, yeah, whatever. I mean, we all knew what it's from. Well, right. Some of us did, youngsters. Those are kind of, and then I remember seeing Larry David's face. I have no idea what the commercial was about. I wasn't paying enough attention. And listen, I wasn't at a party. I was with Wyatt and his buddy and my wife. So there wasn't a lot going on.
Right.
And I still didn't pay enough attention to nothing caught my eye outside of those just, and that I honestly don't have any idea what they were pushing. I just remember seeing Dr. Evil and Sopranos and Larry David.
Like Sopranos are pushing an electric vehicle because they did the whole drive through Jersey and then they
stopped. I'm pretty sure that's what Dr. Evil had too. I think he said something about let's get in the cars or whatever.
Right, something like that. Yeah. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, but like, yeah, it's just here's my plea.
Oh, here you go. Crypto.com.
Okay. Here's my plea
for Larry David.
Stop debuting the commercials before the Super Bowl. It's not hard. Just. You can tease them, sure. Tease them. And then debut it. But we're seeing more and more of them debut. And it's not like, oh, well, I saw this yesterday on my phone.
Right.
You know, it's not funny and it's not shocking or, you know.
So. Yeah, Doritos, they normally have some good ones. Let us down. I agree. Doritos did let us down. So did Budweiser. Where was Bud Light? Where was the Clydesdales?
Wasn't a lot of Budweiser beer commercials or wasn't a lot of Pepsi or Coke.
Mm-mm.
Remember, those were always the best.
The
ones.
Iconic ones.
Yeah.
Felt like Bud Light or Anheuser-Busch spent a lot of money on the little the little coming back from commercials and like live reads almost from Al.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
those seltzers or whatever they were called. I mean, the one I remember from Anheuser-Busch, Guy Fieri was in it and talking about the flavor. Obviously, Flavor Town, trying to make that connection. But it wasn't a great commercial. I just recognize it because I like Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. It has nothing to do with what they were saying, you know. And that's the difference, I think, for this group of commercials this year. In the past, yeah, you attach it to Doritos, you attach it to Bud Light, you know, when they did the Game of Thrones thing, there through the whole game, you know, you attach the Clydesdales to Budweiser. But this year, you don't attach anything to anything. You know, nothing was that memorable. And I think you're right. A big part of it is the fact that you can see them. You know what's coming.
Yeah.
Instead of, oh my gosh, I've never seen those little frogs ever.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's awesome. How cool was that?
Here's one that got everybody to hush and watch is the new Jurassic Park movie trailer. Everybody goes, whoa.
Yeah.
Everybody's back. Even, uh-huh. You know?
That's right.
Yeah, everyone kind of was buzzing about that.
Because it started, and Wyatt was like, what is this, Jurassic World?
Yeah,
and then here comes Laura Dern. I'm like, whoa, no, this is Jurassic Park, dude. It's like the original one.
Yeah, looks fun. Looks good.
And why did they always make them so big? Jeff Goldblum. And that's what she said. We'll end it for a Monday. We'll be back tomorrow.
And on that note, we're done.
Skinny on Sports right here on Sports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered.